So who with the resistance?
Hello, what have we here?
I'm a big deal in the resistance.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 110. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, because this week it's all about Kira. As always, I'm Donya, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, Caitlin and Ben.
Hello.
Hello.
I didn't know which one of you to introduce first.
I know. It was funny because we didn't plan to just That's speak fine. At the same time. So
no,
was,
but it worked nice. Out.
Yay.
If you want to get involved in the conversation, you can get hold of us on Twitter at Our Radio Podcast. You can leave a comment on our Facebook or send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net. As always, today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. With over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, get the latest Star Wars audiobook for free, including Last Shot, the new Lando and Han Solo novel, which is actually really good. I quite enjoyed it. It jumps around in time a little bit. The majority of it is set in, like, the space between Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens. So you've got, like, some really young Ben, and it's really fun. I thought it worked quite well. So hopefully we'll get the chance to break that down and talk about it soon. But we also launched a Patreon. You can check it out at patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. We've got a Discord chat, which also includes our recording studio, where you can come and listen to us recording these episodes live. We also host movie nights, where we will record commentary for different Star Wars films. We do release those later as well, so you can have them as an audio track. And we also do After Dark episodes, where we just kind of go off on tangent and just let things play out how they play out. If you can't...
We don't do that already.
But... Yeah, no, that's very true. To be fair, we do try and rein ourselves back in and stay on topic. For the most part.
Or stay on target.
Yeah. If you can't afford to support us via Patreon, we do also have merchandise for sale. We have t-shirts and button packs available on our website, so check them out. And even if you can't afford to buy those, just let someone know about the podcast. That always will help us out. So, I guess let's start digging into the news. The first piece that we have that we can just cover really, really quickly. So on the last episode, we talked about Star Wars Celebration. It's coming to Chicago next year, and everyone's really, really excited about it. So excited, in fact, that it sold out.
Wow!
Yeah. So 5-day passes.
Unlike solo screenings.
Yeah, 5-day passes are sold out.
It's a crap!
So, if you were looking to go for all 5 days and wanted the 5-day tickets, they are gone. There are still individual day tickets available, so if you just wanted to go on the Friday, or you just wanted to go on the Saturday, or whatever, those tickets are still available, but don't count on them staying in stock for long. If the 5-day ticket selling out that quickly is any indication, it's that there is a very high level of demand for this, and there's only so much capacity that they have. So if you are thinking of going, even for 1 day, try and get your ticket sooner rather than later. Did either of you guys get tickets?
No, it's far. And expensive.
Wow. So Ben over here is like, it's really far, me buying my flight.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's actually very true.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have very high hopes for what's to come out of it, though. So I'm excited. When we start talking about what happens there, I'm all on board to talk about it. But
I think it'll be fun. Obviously, I'll be applying for a press pass, so...
Sweet.
Yeah, I didn't It sucks because I was watching it and watching people buying their tickets, but then in the back of my head, I'm like, I don't need to worry about this, but I also feel really bad for people because it's the same as New York Comic Con and other Comic Cons that Reed Pop kind of look after. Similarly, tickets sell out so quickly for all of those. So it was just kind of watching it going, oh, so many people are going to be disappointed. And I hate that. Right. I wish that more people could go, but obviously there's capacity for the venue and right. They can't oversell that because they also need to have enough leeway to invite press and other people. And then you've got, your guests and your guest speakers can bring people with them. And so they need to have some flexibility to have additional people outside of just attendees. So yeah. It kind of sucks, but yeah, it's sold out very, very fast.
I'd love to know if, random, I don't know, Daisy Ridley wanted to buy a pass just to dress in costume and nobody would know it's her, but they're like, sorry, we're sold out. She's like, oh, okay. do they do that or no? I mean, I would assume she'd be there because they invited her to be on a panel, but...
She will absolutely be there as a guest. She would not be there. Yeah. Because she bought tickets.
We ran out of room, sorry.
Yeah. The other thing that's a knock-on effect of 5-day passes selling out is that hotel allocations also opened up at the same time. Everything that's, remotely close to the convention center, gone. You can't find anything where you can have, days booked from the day you arrive through to the end of the convention. You might be able to still get a room for one day here and there, but for the most part, done. So if you have got tickets to Star Wars Celebration but you do not have a hotel room yet, you might need to look at other options because particularly so you can get your
hotel in the park.
Pardon?
There's a nice bench in the park.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
I want to claim that now, yeah. Too.
The hotels that are, they sell, they have, discounted rates and all of that, so you're going to have to pay full price now. But, yeah, that's all the rest of the Star Wars Celebration news for now. Obviously, with the date set, the venue tickets on sale. Next stuff that'll start coming is announcing who will be there, what to expect, and so on. So expect that to start picking up over the next few months. But yeah, our next story is not so great. Kelly Marie Tran, much like Daisy Ridley had to do, she's left social media. So Kelly Marie Tran deleted her Instagram account because she was just getting bombarded with really awful messages and comments and so on her Instagram account from people who claim to be fans of Star Wars but are very much not. If this is how you are a fan of Star Wars, then I don't want you in my fandom. Sorry, bottom line, what you're doing is despicable. It's awful. You can dislike a film, and a film cannot be... it might not be your thing. You may not have liked The Last Jedi. We've said on the show before, that's perfectly fine if it was not your thing. However, it was other people's thing. People loved that film. You cannot take that away from them. And the fact that you're going out of your way to attack an actress in the movie who very clearly is having the time of her life being part of the Star Wars franchise, is having the time of her life getting along and being friends with all of her co-stars. You know, the fact that you're basically souring this entire experience for her is just get out. You know what? Fine. You didn't like The Last Jedi? Probably the next film isn't going to be for you either. How about you just say, you're done and move on? Because I don't want you here, and any true Star Wars fan who loves this franchise also doesn't want you here. That's it. That's what I have to say, because I am furious. Absolutely furious. I cannot believe that we are in this place where people who are, like, pretending to be fans of Star Wars are going around and doing this sort of thing. They did it to George Lucas. They did it to Hayden Christensen. They almost made Hayden Christensen quit acting. Like, that's the kind of level of vitriol that these so-called fans are leveling at different people that they seem or perceive to be the problem with Star Wars. Yeah, sorry, I'm gonna break it to you. The problem with Star Wars is you. If you are one of those people, you are the problem. Bye-bye. That's it. Done.
Here. And just to add about, like, the toxic fandom, Mikey sent a message. He can't record because he's at work. And he said that he was at Walgreens and wearing a Star Wars shirt. And the guy at the checkout told him he loved Star Wars, but hated Last Jedi and Solo. So Mikey engaged him to talk about what he loved about Last Jedi and Solo. And turns out the guy at the checkout who was hating on them hadn't even seen Solo yet, but was trashing it anyway.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, there's a
huge problem.
Like, I'm not cool with people. I mean, unless he legitimately, like, I don't know. I feel like in most cases, I don't want to say all cases, because I do know there's some that don't necessarily need it. But, like, yeah, like, see the movie before you dislike it. But also, yeah, I think it's cool to hop on the bandwagon now to be like, I hate this movie because everyone hates this movie. I was like, well, not everybody.
No. But,
like, I definitely think there's a large group of people who are like, I don't necessarily like what's happening to Star Wars now, because they grew up with something that was slightly different, which is fine too. I mean, like, I definitely have criticisms of where Star Wars currently going, but that doesn't mean I dislike it. It's just mean it's like, I don't like it in the same way I like, you know, the prequels or the originals or whatever, you know?
I mean, I get that.
Even recently, like, I liked Last Jedi, I liked Force Awakens, but for completely different reasons. So even recently, it's just like this, oh yeah, like, you know, but I don't, yeah. Yeah, I can't.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, sorry, like, go ahead.
Like, for me, when I, like, get into a book series, sometimes the follow-up novels, like, I enjoy, but I kind of, like, I'm kind of, like, it's not a full-on love, like, say, the first book, and I think it's because, especially if there's a long period of time between when the first book is released and the second or the third book is released, I develop my own expectations of where I think the plot or the characters are going, and sometimes when it doesn't go the way I expect, it takes me a little while to kind of adjust to it.
Yeah, no, that's, I get true. That. And I mean, a lot of it can, like, come from the fact that the EU existed before we got any of this. So some of these fans have a preconceived notion of what they want Star Wars to be. But here's a newsflash. The EU hasn't gone away. If you want to completely live in that, if you want to believe that that is the Star Wars that you want, then those books still exist. It's not like they've gone away. You can still go out and purchase those books. They're still being published. They are still available to get your hands on. If you want that to be your Star Wars, it can be your Star Wars. You do not have to accept Force Awakens and Last Jedi as your Star Wars if you don't want to. What you cannot do is make everyone believe in the version of Star Wars that you see. You can't do that. That's not how this works.
And you,
for me, The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi were fantastic. I love both of them. I love especially what The Last Jedi is doing in terms of building on the original messages that the original trilogy set up, and also the fact that it decided to do something different. But there is a preconceived notion of what the original trilogy is in terms of, like, Seeing Han Solo as overly macho, as seeing Leia as like this damsel in distress, as seeing Luke as this stereotypical hero archetype. And it's like, well, if you go back and watch those films and actually really watch them this time, that's not the case at all. Those characters don't fit into those molds that people seem to be thinking that they do. It's like this weird kind of nostalgia filter that they've put over the top of it, and they're trying to make Star Wars into something it's not.
Then also, like, it is, like, Luke, Han, and Leia are based off of the hero, you know, yeah, the macho, like, bad boy and, like, the damsel in distress, which is, I think, why they're perceived as that, because, like, that's what the characters originated from, but then in making the movie, they're like, well, let's change it up and make it something slightly different based off of what people know and are used to. So, like, yeah, I definitely see why people would put a filter over it.
Yeah, the whole thing that makes Star Wars so special is because they subverted that. Leia saves herself a lot of the time. Leia is very much an active participant in her own story. And Luke is very much a gentle, weird, kind of slightly incompetent in some ways character. He's mostly
he's been more sheltered than Leia, let's just say that.
Yeah, he bumbles through a lot of stuff, and it works out for him, but let's not pretend that he received an obscene amount of training. Like, he didn't. Right. He got maybe about as much training as Rey ever got. And basically just kind of fumbles his way through everything, and some of it is down to just innate ability. And Han is all bluster, we know that. He basically just puts on a front, but you can very clearly see who he is underneath. He is not this weirdly macho character that he wants you to think that he is. And if you can't see past that, then no wonder you're getting so angry at the films as they are now, because you never truly understood what Star Wars was in the first place. But yeah.
That, and none of that, I don't care how you perceive the films, does warrant
absolutely
treatment
not
that any of the actors or directors have received.
Not even a little bit. Not even remotely considering doing it. Like, it's not cool. It's not. And I just don't want these people in my fandom. They can go and find something else. Right. Okay, actually, you know what, Caitlin? How about you take this one? What is this Dryden Vos office Easter eggs thing?
Sorry, I'm just gonna... because my internet is being slow. There we go. So they revealed four Easter eggs from his study or office from the movie. So most people, I think, saw the Mandalorian armor.
Yeah.
There's also apparently a Sith holocron.
That would make sense.
Yes, it would, wouldn't it? And it'd be interesting if they are making another movie to see how that comes into play, or if it does. The dancing goddess, which is a callback to a legend story. She's an idol of the Godoan people. And Zim's death's head. And so it's another nod to legends. And as seen on the cover of Han Solo and the Lost Legacy, the Maite crystal masthead that once belonged to Zim the Despot.
Ah, so that's actually... Yeah!
I want to know who the group of nerds they have working on these movies are to, like, suggest background objects.
I mean, you've got, like, everyone who works on these films, like, know what's come before. They've got a whole story group that kind of manages
this
sort of
stuff. There's so much. Like, I even remember, like, referencing Harry Potter, I remember, you know, J.K. Rowling even saying, like, you know, she double checks MuggleNet four things when she writes, just to make sure she gets it. Like, because her world is so big. I think like Star Wars has gotten so big, and Star Wars is no longer just created by one person anymore, too. So like, just to like decide what would go somewhere, or like start digging for something that it's like, oh, that would be cool or whatever. Like, that'd be an awesome like team of creative people to be on.
Yeah, I mean, some of it is that, for example, the EU is out there, or Legends as it's known now, yeah. And they've probably gone back and just kind of gone, okay, what kind of storyline did Han have before? What kind of things can we start pulling back in? And then from there, they've probably, like, reread some of the books or some parts of the books and kind of tried to figure out exactly what they want to do and what they want to put where, especially as a nod back to...
Yeah.
Well,
it's also a way to not completely write off a full novel. You know, it can be like, oh, well, this stuff still fits within the universe that we're now creating. Let's keep it there, you know?
Yeah.
Which I like. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, and it means they're not making something out of nothing. Like, it gives it automatically, like, a story to the object.
Mm-hmm. Moving on to the next story, which kind of surprised me, seeing as Solo is still in theaters, apparently we have got some details about the extras that are going to be on the Blu-ray. So the first few details have come up. So Best Buy has a 4K Ultra HD Steelbook, which has a Millennium Falcon on the front. So it's a really cool sort of limited edition cover. For that, Target have an exclusive Blu-ray which has a Millennium Falcon model. So that's what we have there, but those are the two exclusives that we have so far, but no special features have been announced yet. So apparently, Avengers Infinity War is going to be coming out August 14th, so probably it's going to come out after that. So September, maybe? You're looking like maybe a month
early
later.
September.
Yeah. That would feel like it would be the right time, wouldn't it?
Yeah, early to mid-September, because nothing... Because the summer movie season's like dying down at that point, so it's like, go buy the movies you saw this summer. You know, that's usually how it works.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. So yeah, you've got a couple of options if you live out in the States for the version of the Blu-ray that you could purchase if you would like to. Okay, next story. We have a few more details on Rian Johnson's upcoming trilogy. So, there was an interview with producer Ram Bergman, who was describing working on Rian Johnson's trilogy. So, what Ram Bergman basically said is that it's a completely new trilogy. The writer-director, Rian Johnson, my partner, is going to create. It's all new characters. Everything is new, which I think we kind of knew at this point. So when the news originally broke, a lot of people were like speculating over like which characters were going to spin off, what it was going to be about. But then they'd kind of said that no, this is brand new. They're basically giving Rian Johnson like free rein to do whatever. But Bergman also said that in terms of the plan, they don't know what's going on yet. You know, it's in really, really, really early stages and may come out in like maybe 2 years' time, or at least there may be more information and it might start coming together within about 2 years. Another question that was asked was whether they would consider shooting the new Star Wars trilogy in Israel. And Bergman had responded saying, who knows? It's a function of what the location calls for, but I would be the happiest guy. I did A Tale of Love and Darkness there a few years ago. I would love to work with more Israelis and work in Israel. I was just there 2 weeks ago. I went twice in the last 2 months. My mom is there, my family and friends. So basically, we don't really have a lot more information, but we do have now definitive confirmation that Rian Johnson is basically doing his own thing, which I'm really excited about, because, yeah. I mean, what he started, what he set up in The Last Jedi was something that the Star Wars trilogy really hasn't done before, you know, so I really, really liked the kind of direction and the way that he played around with perceptions and storytelling and all sorts of stuff. So I'm actually really glad that he's getting something that he can mold from the beginning. He gets to do his own thing completely. He doesn't have to work within, you know, sort of set guidelines of, like, you have to have these characters. They kind right. of have to end up at this place because they need to be, like, here for the next film, or, you know, that's the kind of thing that maybe, even though he did incredibly well working within those, you know, it there is slightly less freedom in what you can do when you're working with already established characters that someone else has set up and kind of worked out and played with and started the stories for. So I think it's just really exciting to have Rian Johnson basically do, like, create his own characters, create his own planets, create his own storylines. Like, I'm super excited for this.
Yeah. It's kind of cool. Like,
I think also, like, I know you're saying, like, when is it coming out in, you know, 2 years' time? I would be fine if it's 5 years from now, honestly, because, like, this is the next, like, after episode 9, this is going to be the next, you know, tentpole trilogy that they have. Like, it has to be good. And if that means they have to wait longer than just 2 years to crank it out, like, I am totally cool with that. In almost every way. Because, you know, we've seen a really good movie. Well, again, if you didn't like Last Jedi, that's cool. I didn't the first time I watched it, so, like, I get the reaction. I do like it now. And I think it's because of the, like what Danya was saying, like, the creative leaps that were taken, but also, I don't know, he brought a certain type of, like, fun and, like, swagger back to Star Wars that, I mean, Force Awakens had, but I think was treading carefully because it was the first new Star Wars from Disney. But he really kind of let it loose in The Last Jedi, and I like that a lot, so to get a trilogy of that would be fun.
And, like, if you think about it, like, back when the original trilogy came out, like, I mean, there was, like, next to no knowledge out there for it, and then the universe expanded from the movies. And so, yes, we do have this massive canon and non-canon universe for Star Wars, but this is, like, kind of entering a whole new... This is a new trilogy. It's almost like if you weren't around to experience the original trilogy when it first was released, this is as close as we're going to get.
Right. Because
although we have the background content, this is, like, yeah. as you said, brand new stuff. So, yeah. like, before we... All these movies we've gone into, we've known some or most of the characters involved. Or we know how the story was going to end in the terms of, like, Rogue One.
Mm-hmm. Right.
This time...
Yeah, that's another cool thing is that the trilogy, you know, will be... kind of outside of the characters, but you know, hopefully also the timeline of the three original trilogies that we'll have, which will be really nice, because there can be, like, throwbacks and stuff like that to things we do recognize and know, but, like, for the most part, it can be so far removed that they really are starting this fresh new, this is still Star Wars, but we're going to go this way with it. And that's really, yeah, that is really exciting.
Because we don't even know what time frame it is in. It can right, be so yeah. far in the past or so far in the future that we have the basic knowledge, but like right. nothing else in relation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
Sweet.
I guess let's move on to our spotlight topic, which Yay. Is kind of exciting. So we are going to talk about Kira. But Yay. Before we get to that, first of all, Ben, we have not heard yeah. any of your thoughts on Solo. So at this point, a few of us have been on a couple of episodes and we've had a chance to air a few of our thoughts and kind right. of really break down how we felt about Solo as a movie. But we don't know what you thought at all. So How about we get your feelings on it? Let's
get just like a thing. Yeah, I mean, most of my stuff is probably... I've listened to most of the episodes that I missed this past couple weeks just so I knew what was said already. But a lot of the stuff I think is... Some stuff I have in line with. I mean, I said before I even saw the movie for, like, ever that, like, I would withhold all judgment until I saw it. Now that I have, it's it's kind of like I really enjoyed myself. Sorry, what?
Now it's all judgment?
Yeah, well, you know, like, yeah. I mean, I think, like, I enjoyed myself for sure. I mean, which is going to be weird because I'm going to, like, rip some things apart. But I did enjoy myself, and I did enjoy this movie. But in the end, it's still this movie that was completely unnecessary that fans probably didn't care about or want. Which is why I think a lot of people are being like, well, I don't want to see it. And you know, I was one of those people who didn't want to go see it. But I was like, but I'm going to because it's Star Wars, and I want to see if it's something that I really enjoy. And I did. So I guess, I mean, the things I liked, big surprise, the best part of the movie is Han and Chewie, which is weird, because, like, we weren't expecting that from the Han Solo movie, but I far and away like those two the best, which was a surprise, and, you know, because they made it the big fun movie that I think it ended up being. What else did I really like? I like that he shot first, and that it was, like, a sophisticated way of doing it. You know, they never said, like, when Beckett was dying or whatever, he wasn't like, you shot first, kid, or, you know, something stupid like that. So, that being said, I didn't think, the writing was super intelligent in other places. And I'll get to that in a second. But, and I just wrote down, I'm reading off my notes. One says, and I'm glad this is our spotlight topic because I said, Kira, she is great, in all caps. So, I was like, sweet, I'm glad I had that opinion. Because I did like her a lot. Things I didn't like, which, the list is longer than the things I did like, but for some, you know, I still did like the movie, but I had to kind of write some of this stuff down. I don't think the characters at the beginning, who was it? Val and who's the little dude with four arms? Rio?
Yeah.
Yeah. I like, first of all, they got killed off way too early, but, like, also they didn't, I feel like the characters didn't really earn the deaths that they were given. Like, they were given these, like, cool, like, lines to, like, go out on, and it was really cool and heroic and whatnot, but, like, it was just kind of like, but I had no time to get invested, so, like, I don't understand why I should care. And it kind of really bummed me out because I liked both of them. And then on the flip side, Empress Nest, who killed both of them, really kind of ticks me off because she kills both of them and then turns around at the end of the movie and just says, like, oh, we're teammates. I'm like, everyone was so, like, okay with that. And I would have been like, you killed off two cool people early in the movie. I don't like you. And that's how I was going into it. I wasn't crazy about how Han got his name. I mean, like, it was funny, but it was kind of like, ugh. It was almost like a punch in the face. It was like, dude, like, if that's how you get your name, you could have handled it more tactfully. But I get, it's just like, it's a fun movie. It's not supposed to be anything crazy. Now, here's the big thing. We all went in knowing Lando would be fantastic. I think Donald Glover did a great job, but I didn't like how they treated Lando in the movie. I think it was like, he was made fun of, like, the whole time. And I don't think he deserved that at all, because Lando's such a cool character. I think equally about, like, the... Like, L3, I laughed at a couple things, but a lot of it was just, like, very heavy-handed. And I've always enjoyed, like, subtle humor. I think that's where, like, a lot of Star Wars gets its charm. And so L3 was a bit of, like, this, whoa! Like, I'm getting all this, like, very, like, direct one-liners and all this kind of stuff that, like, I'd never kind of expected from a Star Wars movie. And so she felt a little out of place, to me, at least. I mean, you know, like, and you know, we've been killing off really cool droids recently. And I think a lot of my favorite line was when, I've only seen the movie once, so I don't remember what happened, but, like, something, I think it was Kira, like, knocking out a bunch of bad guys or whatever, and then when they're all just sitting on the ground, L3 goes, whoa. That was, like, I laughed so hard when that happened because, like, it was unexpected, But I think it's because that was a very, like, subtle kind of, like, act of comedy, I guess, you know? And the way she delivered the line, I mean, the credit probably goes to Phoebe Waller-Bridge, but, like, I love when she, like, frees the one droid, and then the droid's just kind of sitting there. She's like, go! Free your brothers and sisters or something. Like, the way she just kind of, like, throws off that line and just is just like, get out of my way, I'm doing something, I also thought was really, really funny. But for the most part, I wasn't crazy about L3. But she had her moments, which was fine. This movie, just like Rogue One, I think relies way too much on nostalgia. But, you know, again, I had fun, even though Darth Maul was, like, the biggest nostalgia play you could have had in the movie. But, yeah, all in all, it was, like, a really fun ride. I'll definitely go see it again, just because I did have a lot of fun. But I could not help but criticize certain things that I noticed, even though that doesn't, you know, I think, you know, a lot of credit has to go to Alden Ehrenreich, because everyone going in was, like, ready to hate him. And I went in kind of hesitant, but, like, within 20 minutes or so, I was like, I really like this guy. And when you realize he's not playing the Han we know, because he's not the Han we know yet, by the end of the movie, he kind of is. I was sold on that. So I think he needs to get a lot of vocal credit from people who saw the movie and really understand what he was doing. For all those people who haven't seen the movie and are criticizing it already, go see the Han Solo movie and go see it for Han Solo, because he's actually pretty good in it. So, but yeah, there's my long-winded notes.
There we go. I mean, I feel like you're kind of on board with most of us. I think you're more aligned with me and Caitlin than you are with anyone else, I think.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that, Caitlin?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. Gosh, what else? Yeah, for me, if you're looking for a movie, this is terrible, but this is basically off of my experience from last night. If you're looking for a heist movie with better represented females in it, go watch Ocean's 8. It's a better movie.
Yeah.
Because it's Ocean's 8 is not heavy-handed. It's just this really cool heist movie that happens to have all female characters in it. And that's all it needed to be. And it was great because of that. You know? I feel like this one had some, like, oh, this is a female character, we should really play it up and let people know that. And I'm like, well, you don't need to. I think just by having a cool character, like, this is why I think Kira was my favorite in the movie. She was there, and she was awesome. And that was good. You know, Rey's the same way. I mean, I'm a Rose fan, you know? The best characters, regardless of male or female, are the ones who are there and being the character that they are. And I think, you know, I don't know why I'm plugging Ocean's 8 on this, but, like, Ocean's 8 did a better job of that, absolutely, hands down. And it was also a really fun heist movie. They didn't make the Kessel Run, unfortunately, but, you know, it's...
I'm quite a big fan of the Oceans franchise anyway,
yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to going to see Oceans 8. Yeah. I definitely
they do a good job.
To.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's a little derivative of Oceans 11. Maybe a little
I don't
too much.
Care.
But yeah, it's I know, right? I was just like, the plot is completely like, oh, I've seen this before. But, like, it's really fun because the charm of the Oceans movies is, like, we have a crap ton of famous people together doing a thing, and that's why you go see it. So, like, it's fine.
Yeah,
that's why it's fun.
Exactly. It has a very specific kind of appeal. It has a very, like, in very different ways. It, for me, it's very, very similar in appeal to the way that I end up liking the Fast and the Furious movies. I know exactly what I'm going into those for.
Yeah.
I know exactly what I want to get out of them.
Yeah.
And for the
and
most...
That's okay.
Yeah, and that's absolutely
yeah.
fine. I can also objectively say that, you know, the Fast and the Furious films aren't good films. They're not. I mean, there is some good acting in it. There are some good moments that are very heartfelt and very lovely. But, like, let's be real. I'm going into those for fast cars and explosions and pure... ridiculousness.
Yeah,
similarly,
and they know that that's what they are, too.
Yeah.
So, like, it's nice to have self-aware movies, you know. But,
Similarly
yeah, definitely.
With...
And, Helena Bonham Carter and Awkwafina were the surprise standouts from Ocean's 8 to me. So when you go, they are absolutely hysterical. I had a great time watching it.
Yeah, this is my worry though, is because I thought Solo was like within the realm of Star Wars. It was a pretty good Star Wars movie. It was
sure,
okay.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah.
My issue being is that there are two heist movies coming out very, very close together. I feel like Solo is a very below average heist movie in the like scheme of heist movies, and having Ocean's 8 come out so close to it is really going to end up highlighting where it's not as good of a heist movie as other ones that can work still within that genre but have a little bit more freedom and more room to play with it. I'm not necessarily saying that Solo is a bad heist movie. I'm just saying that even within that genre, it's just an average one. Realistically speaking, I think Solo is one of those popcorn summer flick movies that you just go to like kill 2 hours of time, and it's not offensive, and you don't feel angry coming out of it. Like, it just, that was fun, and that's it, you move on. Like, there's a lot in Solo that you can break down, but like, I'm kind of in this weird place where I'm like, yeah, but I just kind of enjoyed it for what it was. I don't know if you feel the same, like, in the, I don't feel the need to have to break down every, like, little detail
Yeah, yeah. Because Solo was one of those movies where it's like, it knew what it was, and that was fun, that was good, you know? And I think that's ultimately why I enjoyed it much more than Rogue One, for that reason. I think Rogue One was trying to go a little too serious into the... I mean, like, you know, the plot of Rogue One is a lot more... Well, it's a lot darker, for sure. But I think, you know, it's got... I don't know. I think Rogue One forgot to maintain some of the fun that Star Wars was because of the dark subject matter. Whereas, like, even a movie like Revenge of the Sith has some good one-liners in it. And that's a dark movie, you know? So having something like Solo come out and be like, oh, this is what a standalone can be. It can be really fun. It can be completely unnecessary, but really fun to watch at the same time. Which is cool. I think it's for the Star Wars movie that is completely unnecessary and that nobody necessarily wanted or was skeptical of up until the release. That's a pretty good, you know, review. And I'll watch it again. I mean, like, I if somebody said Rogue One or Solo, which one do you want to watch right now? I'd probably pick Solo. So I would say that's praise right there.
Yeah. Speaking of things that know who they are and what they want, let's actually break down Kira as a character, because she is very unapologetically herself. She knows who she is. She doesn't lie about who she is. She's very upfront and straightforward with a lot of people, particularly Han, about who she is. So let's just read off the description of her from the Star Wars wiki, which is, despite her youth, Kira is Dryden Voss's most trusted lieutenant and an increasingly important Crimson Dawn operative. She has risen far above the bleak conditions of her youth on Corellia, where she lived in the sewers, with the notorious White Worms gang. So, basically we are introduced to Kira at the beginning of the movie. She is kind of running around with Han on Corellia, doing a lot of stuff for the White Worms gang. So basically she is getting together items, money, like anything that she can, basically to keep Lady Proxima in power. So Lady Proxima kind of uses all of these, like, street rats, like, kind of going around and doing her bidding, because, I mean, realistically speaking, she can't go out and do it herself, because she can't be in sunlight. That's Lady Proxima, not Kira. Anyway, so we meet them. Han has stolen some coaxium, and is going to use it to get the two of them off-planet. However, when everything kind of shakes out, Han manages to escape, but Kira remains on planet. She gets captured and ends up being kind of, I don't know if it, like, bought? Like, she's, like, kind of acquired by Dryden Vos and saved. So, yeah. She ends up kind of working with him and basically rising up the ranks of Crimson Dawn. Yeah, so he saves her and demands her lifelong loyalty. He brands her, and then she basically stays with him because she owes him her life, her everything. So she is now part of Crimson Dawn and kind of saves herself that way. What did you think of the relationship between Kira and Han from the beginning of the movie? Like, was that something that you enjoyed watching?
I think that, like, we talked about this on the first reaction episode, because I wasn't on the last one, but we all thought that the writing at the beginning was a little bit clunky and a little bit,
yeah,
like,
for sure,
too much telling and not showing. So I, like, and as I explained on the episode, I was a little bit cantankerous at the time. So I probably, like, and speaking of, like, things not being as you expected them, I wasn't expecting it to start that way. And then with the clunky writing, I was kind of like, it put me on the skeptical side of things. But I was not surprised when Han escaped and Kieran got pulled back.
Can you elaborate? Because I've only seen the movie once and I forgot the whole beginning.
Which part do you need me to elaborate?
I don't really know. I just kind of wasn't listening.
That makes me feel great.
No, it completely wasn't you. I literally zoned out because I was like, oh, there's something crawling on the wall. Should I kill it?
Ben!
It was distracting. I'm a little afraid of things that crawl on the walls, you know? It's not very big, but it has more legs than me, so.
Honestly.
Okay. Anyway. Different rant. Okay, sorry. Continue.
How about we do this? Ben, how did you feel about Kira and Han's relationship and how they interacted with each other at the beginning of the movie?
It was just like classic high schoolers being stupid. I mean, I think that's what they were going for too. Han is kind of stupid, you know? And I don't know exactly where Kira's character was at the beginning of the movie as far as like her actual loyalty, but going into the movie the first time, I mean, the only time I've seen it, I was like, so she's in this movie. She either has to betray him or die by the end of the movie because Leia exists. And we know what happens there. So by the end of the movie, I began to rethink maybe what I thought of her towards the beginning of the movie because of her choices or the choices she had made far before she had reconnected with Han, like halfway through the movie. But then the beginning of the movie, I mean, I think it was fine. It was fun to just set them up, like when they get separated at like the spaceport and stuff like that. It was fun to watch it because it was almost just like overreacting if like someone's parent is just like, nope, you guys can't date anymore. Like, y'all are stupid, you know, that kind of thing. Except it was like, I don't know. It was overdone, I think, on purpose because it was, you know, because later on when they're both more adults, her character becomes incredibly likable, I think, at that point, which I think is the point.
Well, and like going off like the teenagers and being like making stupid choices, the thing with Kira, she's very perceptive and she's very much a survivor.
Yeah.
But as Voss pointed out, Han is her weakness. Like, he doesn't grow up too much in the sense that he still has that level of naivete, where she flat out knows exactly what is going to happen and makes a decision that saves as many people or those she cares about like, instead of running off with Han, she does choose to continue with Crimson Dawn. And just, like, and throughout the movie, she does things like that. And I think even at the beginning, she's very much a survivor, but she also cares for Han. And that's why she kind of tells him to continue, like, even though she's being dragged away and who knows what'll happen to her, she's still telling him to run.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. That kind of reminds me of, like, sort of the classic, like, good guy, bad guy character, sort of thing. Like, she's kind of like, these are the choices I'm making, but I still care about these people who I should totally be against. So I'm gonna kind of, like, sweep them under the rug, let them get away, and then do my thing anyway. I'm thinking of a specific movie where that happens. And type in the comments below if you know what I'm talking about. But, you know, that whole sense of, like, betrayal, but also just, like, but I'm going to let you get away. I'm not going to kill you.
Treasure Planet?
Sure. Let's go with that. Treasure Planet. Because that is true.
Yeah. Except it's kind of the opposite. The good guy lets the bad guy get away.
Yeah, which happens more often than the bad guy letting the good guy get away. But, I think, well, that goes to show she can't really let their close friendship go, even though she's making the choice that she is.
Like, and I also think part of the reason she makes the choices isn't, like, some of it's for her own survival, but also it is to protect Han.
Right.
Whether that just is a conveniently side effect, or whether that was done purposely.
Right.
But I think we're getting ahead of ourselves.
A little bit.
So
just the whole movie in between.
Yeah. So she ends up with Dryden Voss, who ends up training her in the way of Taras Kessie. So that's the sort of martial arts kind of thing that she ends up using later in the movie, which kind of like really impresses L3. So she basically is kind of turned into, I guess, a warrior of sorts, even though for the most part she is seen to be more of a thinker than a woman of action. But that very much kind of highlights and shows her as someone who can take action if it is required of her. How did you feel about like that kind of contrast between who we saw Kira as throughout the movie, particularly when it came to like her relationship with Han and then her relationship with other people and how she manipulated them and kind of got them to do what she wanted right up until she actually then kind of uses brute force?
She kind of reminds me of like essentially she's like a spy, almost kind of, if you this is maybe a odd comparison, but like James Bond. Like, if you think of that level of spy, like, they're all suave and sophisticated, but the moment that something goes wrong and they need to, all of a sudden they pull out this random skill you wouldn't expect them to have. Like, and it allows her to, like, it's not just brute force and it's not just, like, brain power. She's a bit of both. She's perfectly capable of taking care of herself, no matter what the situation, in the sense of whether, like, she managed to navigate around the dangerous situation Voss had put Han and Beckett in, and then also he ended up dragging her into it, but she's also capable of literally kicking ass.
Yeah, that's true. I also think it's just the characters she interacts with who are bad guy characters kind of force her into that too. I mean, like, you know, we've got both, oh my gosh, you just said his name, Paul Bettany's character,
Dryden Voss
and Darth Maul, both in the scenes that they have together kind of abuse her, you know, like she is on her own, you know. And it's really, yeah, like you said, it's really cool to see her, like, she totally knows that and is, like, playing the situation whenever something like it, because like, you know, the scene in the at the end of the movie where they're having the fight up in the penthouse or whatever, she was probably my favorite part of that scene because you didn't actually know what she was going to do.
I kind of did.
Well, I like to suspend my disbelief. Okay, I'm the guy who didn't see Han's death coming in Force Awakens. Okay, you have to understand, when I go to watch a movie, I literally don't look for clues. I want to be surprised at everything. So, you know, there's that, but...
You're very cute, Ben.
Why, thank you.
So at some point during Kira's initial employment, or should I say employment, her...
she's got a 401k.
Yeah. Like she's, sometime during her, like, time with Crimson Dawn, her early time with Crimson Dawn, she was being pursued by a bounty hunter droid called IG-88. So, we kind of know IG-88 from, like, previous canon sort of stuff, so that was kind of, like, a really interesting little, nod there, but we also know, that IG-88 had, like, a temporary partner in Hondo. So they were planning on turning in Kira for a bounty, but she was able to turn them against one another. So she could kind of capture them both and then turn them in for their bounties instead. So that kind of just, like, highlights, like, how incredible she is at turning a situation, like, on its head and kind of being like, you know, this is how I'm going to use this for my own game. But, like, did you enjoy that, like, connection to other parts of the Star Wars universe? Because I was like, oh, hey!
There were a lot of them in this movie.
Yeah, there were. They weren't, like, super obvious either.
No, they were. That was the best part, too. It's like, it was just seeped into the dialogue like it was nothing. But, like, if you were listening, you were like, oh, okay. You know?
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. The first, like, I've only seen Han Solo once, but I completely missed it. It wasn't until I was reading stuff that I was like, oh, right.
Yeah.
There must have been a multi-leg thing on the wall at that moment I didn't notice.
Yes, but that's beside the point. But yeah, no, I agree with you. It was the heavy-handed ones that kind of bugged me. Like, you know, Woody Harrelson being like, I'll be on Tatooine, and I'm like, oh my gosh. But, most of Kira's lines, like, it was like in the middle of a sentence while she was getting a different point across that she would say something that you're like, oh, you know, like, just as the Star Wars fans that we are. Those are the ones I appreciated the most, because they were using those little nods to different parts of the fandom or the universe to get a different point across that was necessary for the story. Whereas the whole Tatooine bit with Beckett at the end of the movie was completely unnecessary. It was just there to be like, guess what's gonna happen? You know, I'm just like, okay.
Yeah. I agree with you on the heavy-handedness. Like, I thought that kind of ruined things in places. I don't like this idea that you can't trust the audience to pick up on certain cues within your film in order to sort of guide them into the way of thinking you want them to go. I think The Last Jedi did that very, very well. It didn't explain a lot to people. It allowed people to make, like, their own interpretations of things. Like, it kind of laid things out a little bit, but not in a way where it was, like, spoon-feeding you, or, like, really blatantly being like, and then there's this. Do you remember this? Oh, ho, ho. And I really, that's one of the things I really liked about The Last Jedi. But yeah, no, I completely agree with you that, like, there were some moments where, like that with IG-88 and Hondo, like, that's really cool. But then when you get to stuff like the Tatooine references, and you're like, oh, come on. At least be a little subtle. Like, you don't need to hit us with a brick.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, obviously, Kira has a previous relationship with Lando. So we obviously knew about her one with Han, and we've talked a little bit about that relationship and how we felt about it, and maybe even a little bit about, like, how they were when they sort of came back together. But the interesting thing for me was that she knew Lando prior to being reunited with Han. So how did you like that relationship, those interactions? Because obviously her kind of relationship with Han was one that we were expecting. Her one with Lando is completely different. Like, I really enjoyed how they spoke to each other, and Lando was kind of caught between this sort of suave sort of gentleman who, like, really liked her and also was slightly guarded about who she was. Particularly in the fact that, like, he was like, okay, I'm going to end up working with them again. I kind of want to protect myself a little bit. I should get something out of this. Hence the kind of using them to get the Millennium Falcon out of being impounded. Like, it was really interesting. But how did you enjoy the Kira and Lando relationship?
I mean, she's clearly comfortable enough with him to make out with Han in his closet, so
that's whatever,
good, I guess.
Whatever experience they had with one another, it's to the point where, like, she asks for a ship, and Lando's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, so there's definitely trust there.
Like, and I think it's more than just Lando being like, ooh, she's pretty.
But Lando's unaware of the fact that she betrays Han at the end, because he leaves before that happens. I think the only thing that would tip him off to that is that she's not with him at the end when he wins the ship, when Han wins the ship from him.
Yeah, but I mean,
I'm wondering what he would think about that.
To be fair, though, he kind of knows that she's part of a bigger, like, criminal gang. Like,
sure,
he's very much in the know about that, and is very much, he knows who she is. Much like Kira is being honest about who she is with Han, Lando knows exactly who Kira is as well. Right. Whereas Han has this image of the Kira that he once knew still in his head. He finds it very difficult to separate her from the one that he meets again years later.
Yeah.
Kira has very fundamentally changed as a person, but Han still wants to see the Kira that he knew on Corellia.
Well, he's just a little kid, you know?
Well,
like, this is the movie where Han kind of grows up because of what she does to him, essentially.
And Lando can't really judge her for skipping out when he did the exact same thing before the real problem even started. So if Han is like, yeah, she left, Lando can't really be like,
she's clearly the reason he's very guarded when he meets Leia. I mean, you know, it kind of makes sense where he's just like all in on, like, you know, being with her because she's really cool and all that good, whatever. And then she turns around and just, I mean, quite literally just breaks his heart. And then he's like, okay, well, you know, screw that. I'm just going to go be a cool guy who shoots people first. Like, and then he meets Leia. And because Leia's character, by default, is very challenging to him, I think is the reason they end up falling in love, because, like, they both push each other's buttons, which is really fun to watch, which is not what they were like, what Han and Kira were like.
I mean, so he also has Sannistaros between those points as well.
Yeah.
So that's between true, Kira and between meeting Leia again, he ends up tangled up with another very strong, very forceful, very opinionated woman who knows who she is and knows what she wants. So, like, he ends up having, like, this kind of type that he kind of gets tangled up with. Like,
but it's almost like an, oops, I have a type. Not like, yeah, I have a type.
Yeah, it is absolutely an, oops, I have a type. Because, the, like, similarly, like, they have the same baseline, these women, but they are very, very different.
Oh, like,
they have this similar sort of strength within them, but it's how they implement it that is what makes them different. So, whereas there are some similarities between the three women, I think they are still fundamentally very, very different in how they use that baseline in terms of, like, who they are as characters. Kira is kind of, like, hugely fundamental to making the Kessel Run actually something that happens. Like, all the way through, like, without her, they wouldn't have found Lando, which means they wouldn't have had the ship to even get to Kessel. In Kessel, they wouldn't have had her kind of stature, should we say, in order to be able to, like, get into the mine and sort of, like, set it up so that they can take it over and get the coaxium and get out. Like, she is very fundamental in a lot of this actually working, I guess. Did you enjoy her role within the Kessel Run? And were you expecting her to have that fundamental a role within the Kessel Run itself? Like, in terms of, like, getting to Kessel, performing the heist, getting off Kessel, and basically getting L3, like, programmed into the ship and, like, helping out with all of that, you know? Were you expecting her to be that fundamental a part, or did you feel like it was, like, going in that a lot of it was going to be based on Han, especially the fact that he gets a lot of the credit for making the Kessel Run?
I mean, I don't think it should be forgotten that he gives himself all the credit for making the Kessel Run, which is why he becomes a legend, not because other people said so. I don't think Lando has told a single soul between Solo and Empire Strikes Back that Han made the Kessel Run. You know? I like the team aspect to it. Because, I mean, like, you know, Chewie was... The moment when Chewie kind of sits down and, like, they're co-pilots for the first time is very cool as well. So how everyone's kind of running around doing their thing on the Falcon, like, contributing what they have to make it happen. But then also, like you said, like going into the mine and, like, fighting and doing all this cool stuff. I think because she's sort of like a double agent in the first place, she has way easier time slipping into that role when she needs to, whereas, like, Han is just himself the whole time. So when they have to be, like, sneaky in going and getting, like, the coaxium and stuff like that, Han's very much like, okay, what are we going to do? And then she just kind of, like, glides into the situation and does it well. And they're like, okay, all right, let's do that. You know? Well,
and I have to appreciate, because usually in heist movies, there's very few female characters. And when they are, they're there because of they're the love interest. They're already with the man who's organizing and doing everything. They have only one skill set that is very important, or it's part of, like, a revenge scheme. So the fact that she is an integral part to this throughout it, I very much appreciate.
Right. But she's a teammate.
Yes, exactly. She's not just, like, some eye candy who's there for show. She actually pulls her weight throughout.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, there's a lot about Kira that I really like. The fact that she's very much her own character, and even though she's working within this group and they're working as part of a team, she's very much her own person. She's still quite solitary, I guess. Does that make a lot of sense, that within a group she's still kind of off?
She keeps her distance.
Like, yeah, she's got a distance between herself and, like, the rest of the characters. Even though she does have a personal relationship with them, she's still very much willing to do what she has to. Regardless of that. And I think that's what I really, really like about her. And she never pretends otherwise. That, you know, in order to make this mission work. She would probably, like, kill them.
Well, and
if that's what it took.
And I think that's, like, because throughout she's always being like, this is who I am. Like, don't be surprised. Like, I've done bad things before and I will do what it takes to survive. So that's why, like, at the end, when she, like, quote-unquote, not really, but kind of betrays Han, like, I wasn't entirely surprised. But I also wasn't surprised when she saved him, because as I keep repeating, and Voss had said, Han is her weakness in terms of she has a soft spot for him and has a hard time distancing herself from that. But it ends up working. Like, but if it had come down to whether she survives or Han survives, I'm not sure she would have sacrificed herself again.
Yeah, and I mean, right. You see that survival in how she deals with Dryden Vos at the end, in terms of, you know, when the tide turns against her, and he very much is about to, you know, kill her, kill Han, kill everyone, in order to get what he wants and get what he needs. Like, she very much is like, okay, cool. Take him out first, and then takes over this faction of Crimson Dawn and starts working with Maul, basically. Yeah. So she essentially, to survive and to ensure her continued survival, she puts herself in a huge position of power and works with Maul. So, that's definitely, like, an aspect of her character in which we see that survival instinct really working in Overdrive. You know, were you... I mean, I guess I was kind of expecting her to... I say betray Han, but, like, realistically speaking, she had no real loyalty other than to herself. And so, we call it a betrayal. To Han, it'll be a betrayal. To her, she's just doing what she needs to, and she never made any promises. Well, really,
to me, a betrayal is she, like, stabbed him in the back. She just, all she did was leave him on the planet.
Yeah,
she didn't harm him. She didn't kill him. She didn't, like, take what wasn't hers but was his. She did none of that. She essentially helped him with this plan, made sure he survived, and then left for both their survival.
Yep.
That's so, why I was like,
yeah. Even though, like, we were probably expecting her to not continue to be involved with Han, mostly because we knew, like, where he needed to be in order to eventually end up with Leia, you know, were you expecting something along the lines of, like, a Maul kind of sized reveal where she's actually working with, like, a former Sith and, like, is kind of, like, on that side of things, you know? Were you expecting, like, a big sort of reveal along those lines, or was that something that took you completely by surprise?
I was, if they were gonna reveal, I thought it was just gonna be, we're gonna reveal the super bad guy, the boss bad guy, for the next movie. I wasn't expecting it to be Darth Maul, although it being called Crimson Dawn kind of makes sense, because he's red, like crimson, mm-hmm. and he rose, so dawn. But so that was kind of a nice surprise. But I was kind of like self-satisfied the fact that I knew that he wasn't dead, and then most of the rest of the theater, you can tell by their audible response that they did not know that he was alive. So that was fun.
Yeah, that's true. For all the moviegoers who are just, like, Star Wars moviegoers and that's it, this is the first time it's been revealed to them that, like, Darth Maul survived.
Yeah.
So, for a lot of people, it is a big twist, you know? Which I think is
very
cool.
Like, not just a twist in the terms of tying, like, Star Wars Episode 1 and Clone Wars and Rebels to, the Solo movie, but just the fact that he survived being cut in half and dumped down a massive hole.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you feel like Kira might end up being like a bigger bad moving forward? Like, do you think that she's going to be a primary antagonist or force working against Han and the other characters? Because we know that there's a planned trilogy of Han Solo movies, of which this was the first, with how they set up Kira at the end there to be a huge piece in Crimson Dawn and working far more closely with Maul. Do you see her, or do you see Han and her crossing paths again? And do you see Kira as like almost being the woman behind the curtain, so to speak? So the one pulling all the strings and making people like do her bidding in terms of like being a primary antagonist moving forward?
I kind of see it in the sense like the next movie just to throw us off the scent of them introducing a different seemingly unrelated conflict or bad guy or antagonist, but then maybe at the end, whether Han knows it or not, but them revealing that Kira was part of it or was present during one of the climax of the movie, but was the reason why he survived when, like, there was, like, a shot that, like, hit the space beside his head or something, and you find out later or through a different angle that, like, this masked person had knocked the assassin off. Like, you know, that kind of thing? Like, I feel like maybe that's just me, how I would do it, but I would throw people off the scent of, like, oh, we're never gonna see her again. And then when you least expect it, pull her back out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she could be... Yeah, I agree with that. That would be a good reveal, too, because it'd be, like, one of those that's like, oh, that makes sense, but also you don't necessarily see that coming.
Or kind of, like, say whenever throughout the series Han runs... If Darth Maul continues to be a presence, like, as an antagonist throughout that series... If they bring him back, like, Han Solo coming face-to-face with him, and then, like, Kira walks out from behind Darth Maul.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, again,
I think that you're not too far off in terms of, like, they will probably utilize her. I think that they'll probably use her more in name than in, like, showing her. So she won't be around in person, but she will have, like, a reputation. So to speak, she'll become like a Dryden Voss-esque name across the galaxy in terms of like people will know her name and they'll know that she's behind certain things and they'll know that it's her doing and they won't want to cross her because she's so dangerous. But I don't feel like they're going to really push that relationship because I feel like she probably doesn't want to cross paths with Han again. I feel like she's... For her, she's probably satisfied that reunion, that heist, that everything with Kessel is, like, the line under their relationship. They now both can move on. Whereas there was, like, some unresolved and unfinished business between the two of them. Like, there was no real closure there. And while they don't necessarily have closure in respect of, like, neither Han nor Kira have, like, a definitive answer on, is this going anywhere, yes or no? They haven't really... It's not, like, a discussion they've had. Kira's, like, leaving him is as much an answer as he would ever get as to, is this something that will be... continue to be pursued? Is this a relationship that will play out now, moving forward? You know, it's not. That's the end of their... direct interactions, but indirect interactions, I feel like there's still a lot of space and room to explore that. How they do it, I don't know, but it'll be interesting to see, I think. Well,
that, and I feel like she would probably avoid him just because she doesn't want to be in a conflict of like having to kill him or wound or like injure him to get what she needs done. So if she can keep him away or avoid him altogether, she doesn't have to worry about what she may have to do to him to get what she needs done.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Any other thoughts on Kira, guys? Like, anything else that you would like to bring up before we wrap up for the night?
Not really. That was very thorough.
Thank you very much.
Go us. Caitlin, are you alive?
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Okay, so if there's nothing else to add then, thank you all for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. Feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast or on Facebook at facebook.com/ResistanceRadioPodcast. Remember to visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/ResistanceRadioPodcast. And as always, I'm Donya.
I'm Caitlin.
I'm Ben.
And may the Force be with you.
And also with you.